The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. This is War of the Worlds on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm George Eliason, and this is the radio broadcast from TNT breaking the news of the War of the Worlds. In front of the microphone, you won't be hearing armchair generals and think tankers paid to run propaganda for NATO and the Biden administration. Our microphone is fitted with a special filter to keep the propaganda and false expertise out. This is not the hour for repeating what you've already heard and rehashing what you already know. This isn't the crosstalk of reporters pushing bylines in exchange for your money. And this isn't the BBC's hard talk with its soft-centered confectionery manufactured at the Foreign Office and MI6. They are the alien invaders. This is the hour when you'll be able to hear the news breaking from the news fronts throughout Europe and from your ears to your brains. Not the alien invaders, but the fresh, original human analysis of what the breaking news means. So sit tight. Here goes. Now, today we've got a special guest, Irina Zuckerman, and she's a human rights and national security lawyer based in New York and a fellow at the Arabian Peninsula Institute. She runs a national security law practice and is a program vice chair in the Oil and Gas Subcommittee of the American Bar Association. In addition, she's the president of Scarab Rising Incorporated, a media and security strategic advisory company, and is the editor-in-chief of the Washington Outsider, which is focused on foreign policy, geopolitics, security, and it hosts its program called the Coalition Radio Station. Now, Irina specializes in information warfare, which is what we're going to be getting into today. And she's written and spoken extensively on active measures by Russia, China, and Iran, and influence campaigns by Middle Eastern state actors, as well as on the impact of active measures and influence campaigns on the human rights and on the NGO world. Finally, she's a member of the editorial board of the Maghreb and Orient Courier. We'll be getting to her after the break, but right now, let's discuss information operations in general. Now, we're not going to be getting into what's going on in Israel and Gaza today, but it will give you the state of the state of how information warfare practitioners actually view themselves, their own roles, and you. How do they see you? Which is actually the single most important thing that we can talk about. Really think about it. The core of information warfare, and we're going to try to get into it today a bit, is warfare. This is governed by the laws of war. The Talon Manual for Cyber Warfare defines what is legal and illegal for cyber war and information war practitioners. Now, this is lined up with the laws of war, and we're talking bombs, tanks, and guns, because under the laws of war, it's considered the same thing. So what happens when this is geared specifically at civilians, protected groups? We'll get into it a little bit today. I'm not expecting the conversation to go overly far, but the Talon Manual really spells it out. See, when you talk about it on the show, and we have in the past, the law of war says that you're a protected group because, well, you have a social group on Twitter or a political group on Twitter, or you have your people that in your Twitter world are, you know, they conform to a very specific set of politics. All right. You agree with each other. And if people, groups like that are targeted specifically for their politics, or because they look at something socially, okay? Now look at social well-being. We can look at COVID vaccines, for instance. Can you target people in information warfare? Okay, can you go after them because of that? Technically, you cannot. You're engaging in warfare. Warfare against civilians is called what? Terrorism. It's called terrorism. And when civilians do this, it gets really interesting because you have these companies and you have volunteer groups that are doing this. The companies are generally state-sponsored. They're working for somebody. The volunteers, some are, some aren't. It's their political thing. So, and they try to hide behind that. It's their political belief, so they can defend it, but you still cannot target people. When I grew up, we were taught that, you know, your freedom ends at the end of your nose. As soon as it violates somebody else's freedoms, somebody else's rights, or even their body, like when you punch somebody, you're not free to do those things. But let me tell you something, and this is the truth. You would rather face 100 Navy SEALs in your neighborhood than one very, very good information warfare practitioner. You have a chance of surviving and winning against the SEALs because ultimately, at the end of the day, they're human beings. And, you know, if you listen to them, you know, give account of, you know, life and career and stuff, every once in a while you'll hear somebody talk about the Golden BB. Well, what's a Golden BB? It's the single bullet from an AK-47 that takes down a helicopter. It's the four-year-old that picks up a handgun, drops it, and kills your buddy in war. It couldn't happen. It's impossible, but it happened. Dumb luck. You would rather face 100 SEALs because dumb luck will eventually take them all out. An information warfare operator is always hidden until they're not. And today we'll get to peek a little bit into what happens when they come out and talk about what they do openly. And I see that as a great thing. We're going to be discussing real life happenings. We're going to be talking about a little bit about George Papadopoulos, how this rolls into Trump, what's going on today, what is the state of the state. What you're going to get a real feel for is that with information warfare practitioners, it's always about our side. Our side. The other side, the enemy, is always the enemy. The other side is always wrong. It's always propaganda. The other side never tells the truth, even when we're lying, because that's information warfare. It's just actually how it's spun. So it doesn't matter what good you're actually doing when you're going against an information warfare expert whose client is doing the opposite of what you're doing. You are the enemy. You are the person that needs to be defeated. You are the security threat. And it's all about you. And this is what makes it so dangerous. I've talked about it a number of times. In 2012, the Schmidt-Munt Act was revised. It made propaganda legal in the United States. It made it legal for the United States to do this against their own citizens. And they legalized information war against U.S. citizens. Listen to her closely and listen to what she's saying, because she's talking about you. You see, you don't have to agree with me on anything. But you do have to agree with her on everything, or you become the other to an information warfare practitioner. You become the other, the enemy. You become the one they need to arrest to take out. It doesn't matter if the facts are there or not. It doesn't matter if they have any evidence or not. It just doesn't matter. Your trial will be in media or social media. And if you get in their way, they are coming. And that's just a fact. So when we come back for the break, from the break, we're going to be covering all of that. And what I want to do is make this an ongoing conversation with her and really get into the nuts and bolts of everything. Things that have happened starting 2016, 2017, 2018 that you're familiar with, and really break them down. What is important and the big takeaway is hearing what people think. Whether you agree with her or not, you're getting the inside baseball. You're getting the inside scoop of how these things actually work in real time. And that is important for all of us. Whether you are a Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. Because everything in the world today affects us all. And if we look at it, well, this is you know, MAGA, those, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, great. Whatever you do there affects you too. Or the other way around. So it's not a matter of finding the center somewhere. It's deciding, what do we want for us going forward legally? Do we want to give up our rights? Should we give up our rights as people? Because once you give them up, they don't come back again. They never come back again. And it doesn't matter if the law is with you or not. Once these precedents start getting set, the precedent favors the opposing party if you're on the wrong side of it. And that's what it'll be judged by. This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm George Eliason. We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll have Irina Zuckerman when we come back.
TNT Radio's Jeremy Nell.
I've got Judy's book. I've gone through it. It is very, very persuasive. And it's by far one of the best accounts that I can see that has happened. But the problem is, it's so much to take in that you have to kind of split the whole thing apart, because it's a highly complex concept. The idea of directed energy makes no sense to anybody in the main. However, I did notice, Andrew, that with that recent situation that happened in Maui, suddenly I'm seeing the conversation popping up. Have you noticed?
Yes, very much so, Jeremy. Yes, in fact, quite directly, you know, that led to a spike in the sales of Dr. Judy Wood's book. And then, of course, we've now had the 22nd anniversary of 9/11, so they've got another spike for that. So in terms of how do you start these conversations, you know, going back to the previous question, well, the starting of conversations has perhaps got a little bit easier now that we've gone into sort of living in clown world, you know, as so many people have said, and things have been turned upside down with COVID and all of that. And many more people have said, no, what the hell is really going on?
Jeremy Nell on today's probably. News Talk, TNT
Are you sure
Radio.
We should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes from loss of hope to hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's very important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, "Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out."
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to War of the Worlds with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back from the break, and we have Irina Zuckerman. She's the president of Scarab Rising, a media and security strategic advisory company, and the editor-in-chief of the Washington Outsider. Irina's specialty is information warfare, commercial and state. That's correct?
Yes. But not just in commercial landscape, in any landscape.
Mm-hmm. Irina, welcome to the show. This is War of the Worlds. Can you tell us a little bit about what Scarab, the services that Scarab Rising offers, and explain what is defensive and offensive information warfare?
Sure thing. So it offers a variety, actually, of services that range from geopolitical risk analysis to threat assessment that could be unique to each client, to intel gathering and analysis in terms of information warfare. What information warfare is simply the use of information landscape to take to gain tactical or strategic advantage over an adversary, a rival, or an opponent. So that could range to cybersecurity operations, from our cybersecurity operations to traditional communication such as propaganda. To more serious psychological warfare, and in terms of defensive information warfare, that simply means assessing vulnerabilities of the client, assessing the initial threat, and providing a comprehensive strategy for preventing, or disrupting attacks. Offensive information warfare simply means doing. Once you have identified the threat, doing that to the other side. If you have a political adversary, an adversarial state that threatens a NATO country, I can assist the entity affiliated with NATO, for instance, in figuring what that threat is and providing a strategic output for their vulnerability, how they can be best attacked.
Well, what actually comprises a threat? A lot of this is done commercially today, so it's not just state. For a commercial contract, what is a threat? What would that be?
Cybersecurity threats are really the most common ones. Sometimes it's essentially attacking a company, trying to gain information and then leaking it and using it in an adversarial manner. Sometimes it could be against the company itself, or sometimes it means attacking one of its principals and causing embarrassment to this individual. so that the the business is affected.
So essentially, it goes back to information warfare and information operations.
Exactly.
The Talon Manual is what defines cyber warfare, information warfare. And they've defined it, especially in Talon 2, that information warfare is literally warfare. Non-state actors doing this, taking part in it, are, under their definitions, because you have a whole list of protected entities, protected persons, terrorists. That's what their attributions read. How is this different?
Well, very often it's actually not. Just because they're a non-state actor doesn't mean that they cannot work with state actors and use their definitions and abide by the terms of their agreement with the state actors. Very often even if they act independently and for their own reasons, the methods that they use are actually remarkably similar, because at the end of the day, the war is war. They can be just as ruthless in cyberspace as they are in real life. And they can certainly use information to terrorize people just as they use violence to terrorize people to achieve political agendas against whatever is their target, including, by the way, sometimes each other.
But doesn't that put Scarab Rising into that category also? For, let's say, a commercial client, or let's say a foreign government, Ukraine uses information warfare. They actually pioneered a lot of this stuff with SEL and IOTA Global against American alternative media, mm-hmm. against political activists, against actually political leaders in the United States. They have a Ukrainian army that's over 200,000 strong. And they actually sent out a notice after I exposed them that, yes, this is terrorism in some states and in your country. If you're involved in this, you may be considered a terrorist for this. Working with countries that, because the U.S. has the biggest media landscape, working with countries that are literally targeting Americans, is this, what how does that fall into place here? What would you consider this?
Actually, that's part of the normal information warfare landscape, because Americans are target from all stakeholders in this and many other conflicts. Russia is actually by far a worse offender in that regard. Of course, exposing an American politician or an American media personality that receives illegal funding from a third party, in my opinion, is not terrorism at all. And it's not even information.
We're not talking about your opinion, though. We're talking about the letter of the law. And Talon is the golden rule.
It's not illegal if you're not taking part in any action that in itself is not illegal. For instance, hacking and leaking an American's information would be illegal. But providing opposition research and analysis of illicit financing would not be illegal.
Well, if the line that they draw, if you're doing this against information war, is war. We've established that. It falls mm-hmm. under the laws of war. So if you're targeting civilians that are a protected class, whether it be political or nationality or just social groups, it is considered terrorism under that golden
Not at all. If you're not doing anything that in itself is not illegal, terrorism is terrorism. Providing information breakdown of them doing something illegal is not terrorism. It's a service that I should be doing regardless of who I'm doing that with. This is something.
So even though a foreign country is targeting Americans, that's fine. That's what you're saying?
Yes, it depends on what they're doing. Of course, I would certainly not engage in anything that would be illegal under the U.S. law. But those sorts of information campaigns that you just that we are talking about, the sort of simply information arguments, simply questioning someone's reputation, questioning someone's methods, questioning somebody's affiliations, that's not illegal.
But it's gone a lot further than that into information operations. And it's definitely information operations. That
information operations are not in themselves illegal just because they're part of information warfare. Illegal action is illegal. If you're engaging in something that is otherwise illegal, like a cyber operation that engages in illegal hacking, that's clearly defined. In the U.S., that would be illegal. But just because something is a war doesn't mean that everything that every tactic that you use during the war is unacceptable and illegal.
So now, as far as I know, the cover for this legality was a 2012 revision of the Schmidt-Mundt Act. Is that right? That's what made all this legal?
You mean under international law or under U.S. law? Because I'm U.S. law. Yes.
That's what legalized propaganda and the use of information warfare against United States citizens. It made it a gray area.
It could be a gray area, yes.
So, now before 2012, all of this was illegal. All of it.
No, I wouldn't say that it was illegal. Propaganda itself is not illegal because we've been subject to propaganda.
Illegal until 2012 with the revision of the Schmidt-Mundt Act. That's what made it legal.
I would argue that it defined it. It didn't make it legal or illegal. It more clearly defined it what is acceptable and what is not.
No, it made it legal. That's what did it. And that was one of the biggest uproars about that particular bill passing, that particular revision. Now, if that was reverted back to 2012 and everything you described became illegal again, should or would people involved in information war representing foreign countries, because America has the big diverse media pool, targeting people in that pool, whether they be readers, listeners, they're watching videos, whatever, in an information war, because you're a lawyer, so what kind of criminality would that involve if you're working with a foreign government targeting people in America?
That depends. And it depends on what you're doing and how you're doing it. But if your government already considers that activity in itself illegal and all you're doing is trying to expose it, it doesn't make you a criminal mastermind. It doesn't make you a propagandist for the other side. It just means you're doing your job as an American citizen. And actually, the overwhelming amount of majority of my work is related exactly to that. Whether a foreign entity also happens to be doing the same thing for their own reasons is beside the fact.
Well, let's look at Russiagate as the example. When it was actually pried open, everything was looked at, it came up as just a series of information operations. There was no teeth to it, ever.
Well,
it was an operation in media.
Here's actually where I would draw a line. That depends. There were certainly a lot of entities indeed pursuing information operations, and there were certainly a lot of people who lied, exaggerated, or brought in issues that were very tangential and peripheral. But if you look at the Senate Intelligence Committee at the time, they very clearly cited links between Russian operatives and various members of the Trump campaign. And they very clearly stated that Russia was it targeting the campaign
where?
For lobbying purposes. So that was not inaccurate or untruthful at all. And it's important
actually,
to make
a
distinction.
All got thrown out. Which
no, it
what
wasn't
specifically
thrown out. The Senate
about?
Intelligence Committee conclusions are still there. They're very much on record. What was thrown out is Robert Mueller's investigation, because it was indeed deeply flawed. But what the FBI was doing, what the special counsel was doing, what the Congress was doing and the Senate committee was doing, they're all very different investigations, and they should not be all lumped into the same category.
What specifically is it that stayed, that was justified?
The entire Senate intelligence conclusion that Russia was lobbying the Trump campaign, that it was deeply involved in the targeting of various officials, and that some of the officials had indeed contacts and ties to the Russian operatives. And in fact, a few people...
Which Russian operatives?
To Deripaska and the entire network that was cited there.
You're talking about the meeting at Trump Tower, correct?
Not just the meeting, the Trump Tower, but also various other encounters, I would say, and forms of political outreach.
Such as what?
Such as efforts to recruit various and assorted individuals into the political lobby. And we've seen that some crimes were committed in the process. The people convicted were not convicted for espionage, they were not convicted for necessarily under FARA convictions, but they were convicted in crimes that were related to the cover-up of this business. And we are talking about people like Paul Manafort. And we are talking about people who've done business in or with Russia-backed entities.
Okay.
So yes, that's not the same thing as saying that
let's
Trump
talk
was
about
directed by Russia. In that sense, that story was not provable and not, you know, and blown out of proportion. But to say that nobody was involved with Russia in any way is just simply not true.
Because that was the media narrative. If we look at Paul Manafort, for instance, I actually, that was one of the stories I sourced out. And it was actually that black book. The black ledger was put together by Pravi sector operatives working with SCL. That was a fraud. The Russian part of it was actually a group called, in English, it's called Humpty Dumpty. They were working in Kiev, helping build the information war from 2014 onward. They were part of Ukraine's cyber alliance, and they were working with cyber junta on that. And they exposed themselves. And quite frankly, all parties fessed up to all that. But it was a right sector operation that created that black ledger. We've got to take a quick break. Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Katie Hopkins.
In Paris, there's a infestation. Oh, it's Mickey Beach! Of bed bugs. 1 in 10 have experienced bed bugs in the last 5 years, but there is a puny outbreak in Paris. And so there's kids like on the subway, on the metro, filming the puny crawling over the seats on the Paris transport system. Makes me go all funny. And now Paris City Hall and President Macron are calling for action. It's a measure of how seriously they take the issue and how they need to protect the image du Paris ahead of the 2024 Games. They are not dismissing the bedbug invasion as panic. They are saying it's a real-life thing. Scare stories flashing across the internet. People on the metros are now standing up because they don't want to sit down. General psychosis has taken hold.
Katie Hopkins on TNT Radio.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party? You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other and build family memories we will carry with us forever. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. It's easy. Just put in your zip code to find family-friendly outdoor destinations near you. You'll also find guides to free activities, games, and amazing forest facts. Give the magic of the outdoors to your kids and reconnect with your family. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Email from school about the incident today.
Scary.
Tell me about it. Did you have any idea that was going on?
None. I mean, you saw Derek at the game last night too. Did you have a clue?
No, but you know, teachers like me, parents, we don't always know as much as you guys do. Kids hear first about what's going on with other kids.
Half the time, it's rumors.
It can be hard to tell sometimes, but if you have a concern about a friend who's having trouble with alcohol, prescription drugs, bullying, violence, anything, you need to tell an adult. Mom or me, a teacher, coach, school counselor, someone you know and trust.
Dad, no kid is gonna tell an adult about that kind of stuff.
I get it, but if we don't know, we can't help. Speaking up about a problem, that's what helping a friend is all about.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
This is War of the Worlds on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is War of the Worlds, and we have Irina Sukerman talking with us about information war. And quite frankly, this is one of the most interesting conversations I've had about it. It really is. Now, we're talking about Paul Manafort. The ledger itself was a frame-up, and it was actually from inside his own office. There was somebody there that was working with SCL that worked with, it wasn't right sector directly. This is, they're inside the Ukrainian Ministry of Culture right now. It's called the Ukrainian Ministry of Information Policy. That's what set that up. And unfortunately, it was also the anti-corruption, whatever it is in Ukraine, played a part in it. Now, which other conviction are you talking? Are we looking at George Papadopoulos? Are we looking at, because that was
for sure a target of the Russian of Russian interest, and he does not deny it.
George Papadopoulos was never targeted by Russia. He was the Ukrainian government and STL operatives were trying to reach out to him and make a link to an incoming Trump administration probably 7 or 8 times. This is documented.
That may very well be true, but the fact is he was also a target of the Russian operatives.
And he Which played, and Russian why operatives?
Because he was trying to He was simply not telling the truth about what was happening. Whether or not his outreach was convicted successful or not is a different story.
He was convicted on fake information.
It's not a subject of debate. His culpability is in the actual targeting is different from whether he lied about the fact that he was in fact a target and whether there was a Russian interest in recruitment and there was. And that was very obviously true.
So where, distinction
between whether Russia was actually targeting people and whether they actually cooperated with it. It's accurate. But to understand the national security interests of the United States, we have to be looking at
Let's stay with George Papadopoulos for a minute. Let's stay with George Papadopoulos for a minute. Now, you're saying the Russians were targeting him. Where were they targeting him? When?
At various times, I would say that the entire story of the way they have tried to recruit him is certainly complicated and murky, but so are all the Russian information operations and recruitment efforts. Starting with, the whole thing started with the Mifsud approach and with that entire effort. Indeed, when we're talking about intelligence operations, more so than an attempted espionage recruitment, we're delving into a slightly different category than simply information warfare, although information warfare could also, and it often is, also intelligence work. But we're straying away from information operations to spy recruitment. And
right, but
recruitment.
We don't even have a recruiter, we don't have, what are we
Do
talking
we not?
About?
You know, recruiters don't just necessarily come over and tell you, here, I'll give you $100, come work for me.
Right.
Getting someone involved in something potentially illicit or underhanded could be very subtle. And
exactly. We're talking about something that there was no evidence for. George was railroaded.
Papadopoulos doesn't hide that it happens. He's quite open about what happened. He's quite open about who was going after him and why, and he's quite open that the Russians had an interest in him because he was one of the people in the circles, and he had links to think things that were thought to have security, to be involved in security.
No, he was doing energy.
And energy
he had a few
is one of the main goals of security sphere. Energy security is actually one of the most important topics we're dealing today. It's the raison d'etre for Russian involvement in Ukraine to begin with. People often mischaracterize Russia's motivations as mere territorial ambitions to expand their land. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the interest in the energy. And Papadopoulos was of interest since attending the Marrakesh energy meeting in 2016.
Papadopoulos was talking about the Aphrodite field.
Investment and links in Russia. That's where he was first spotted at the peak of a gathering that symbolized the interest in this sphere, the sphere that has proven to be a national security priority for all the actors involved, including and especially the United States.
Yeah, but that's not accurate at all. Papadopoulos was trying to get open.
The Marrakesh meeting and the role energy has played in it, or the fact that the energy has been a target.
Was he trying to open the Aphrodite field?
In many ways, or the fact that Russia has always had a heavy interest in the Ukrainian oil and gas. How is it not a security issue, whether in this conflict or in a more broader sense?
Russia has all the oil and gas it needs.
But nevertheless, the country is impoverished. If it has all the oil and gas it needs, why does only half the country have access to gas, to hot water? Why are the hospitals lying in ruins? Why is it so terribly mismanaged? It should be one of the richest countries in the world, and yet the population is distraught. So
I think you better take another look at Russia.
Or it is so corrupt that all of its energy sector is controlled by a few oligarchs. So yes, it is looking for additional oil and gas in other places. As you know, just because someone has the capability to be energy independent doesn't mean that they are. The U.S. is the number one oil producer in the world, and yet it imports energy and oil for its own domestic needs. Energy cycle works differently from what people often understand.
Hold on. We started out with George Papadopoulos, and you moved to Russia. Let's go back to Papadopoulos for a second, because what he was doing in 2016 had little to nothing to do with Russia. It was the gas fields around Cyprus and Israel.
And he wanted to circumvent Turkey. Russia doesn't operate in Cyprus. Russia is not laundering money in Cyprus.
It doesn't matter what Russia was doing. George Papadopoulos was part of the Trump campaign. He was trying to set up U.S. policy, circumvent Turkey, which is a NATO ally, go around them, and present cheap oil and gas. It was gas fields, cheap gas for Europe instead of the expensive stuff coming out of Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, okay? And that was what the whole thing was about.
If it went through Turkey. Anything you said, you're actually enhancing my argument, because somebody like that would be prime pickings for Russia precisely because of what they're doing.
Yeah, but what you're doing right now is very speculative. And it's
It would be like me assuming
that you are politically a Melnik or a Bandera because you're Ukrainian. It wouldn't be fair to you.
What am I assuming here? Am I assuming that George Papadopoulos, what exactly are you saying I'm assuming here? That somebody is an energy
somebody
that is a contra- that by the way is
because they're in the
in
energy
a major
field
here that is a top priority for Russia would not be a target. That's just not inaccurate. Turkey and Russia have currently, by the way, major energy agreements, and
what you're saying is you want me to believe that somebody who was working for what became an incoming presidential administration, working for them, would do anything to jeopardize his position or theirs going in.
First of all, I didn't say that the recruit was successful. All I said is Papadopoulos was a target and that he lied about it, which is why, hence his conviction. Second, of course, people do all sorts of illegal things in all sorts of circumstances. If they're compromised, if they're greedy, if they have an ego and ambitions, or if they're stupid and being manipulated.
Papadopoulos' pocket, and he returned it. Which, you know, I've talked to George a little bit, and the conclusion that I came to talking to him, okay, getting to know people around him, is that this guy is as honest as the day's long.
Honestly, anybody working in a political operation has to understand that there is going to be very gray areas. And even with the best of intentions, you will sometimes cross red lines. The fact that he covered up information, material information, in the course of the investigation, in the efforts to recruit him, tells you all you need to know. If you are so honest, why do you need to cover something up? If you are so completely sure about who is around you, why, and what they want from you, why hide it? That's my personal opinion. I have no problem personally disclosing my international contacts if the need arises. The fact that Papadopoulos did made it seem indicates that he was aware that he was a target for some sort of an operation, whether it was Russians or whoever, whether he knew it from the beginning or he understood it later, it's very obvious that he knew that somebody like him was in a perfect position to be useful to foreign intelligence agencies and foreign interests.
Yeah, he thought it was Misfud. That's who he thought it was. Joseph Misfud.
Well, people don't operate in isolation, especially academics and people like Mifsud, who absolutely can have backing from anybody in the world. And Papadopoulos, going into this field, was not so naive that he could not possibly figure that out, given Mifsud's proximity to various interests in the Mediterranean and elsewhere. And
which interests?
Academic interests, security interests. Because he was operating in the Mediterranean, that in itself could raise questions about who was he representing, why was he engaging with Papadopoulos. It was a good time to ask
questions. He was setting up contacts for the incoming presidency. Donald Trump was a candidate in 2016. He was doing very well.
And that's precisely why Papadopoulos was of interest. Why would anyone want to be close to somebody who is doing badly and very likely to lose? You want to be close to somebody who is a winner, who is leading, who has a chance to become a president, or at least is interesting enough to draw people around you who can have a career. So yeah, of course, Papadopoulos would be a target in those circumstances. And the fact that he was tied into strategic interests for many countries, including Russia, only made him even more...
How was he... Yeah, but you keep speculating, okay, he's tied to Russia, and he's never has been.
It's a fact that he does not deny at this point in time. That's not speculation. That's exactly the opposite of a speculation. I'm only telling you what Papadopoulos admits.
Okay, and what was his connection directly to Russia then?
Well, you're going to have to ask him that question. All right. We're talking about is whether or not he was a target, and he absolutely was.
So we're looking at speculation again. Papadopoulos was railroaded like
speculation.
Manafort was.
About a set of facts. Let's not move the goalposts. Our facts was not whether Papadopoulos was a Russian agent and what he did for Russia. Our question was whether he was a target and why would Russia be interested in him, and whether the information space around him just created a legend that he was around him or not. And there is evidence pointing to the fact that he was absolutely a person of interest and he was a target. He lied about it. He covered it up. He is no longer lying about the fact that he was of interest. And that's basically it. Nobody is saying that he was successful, that Russia was successful, that he became a spy or did anything illegal other than covering up for that investigation. I'm not making that assertion. Neither is anyone else.
Now, this has been a really interesting conversation so far and, quite frankly, educational. Now, you've gone on record saying that you've criticized Israel for not selling Pegasus to Ukraine and Estonia and for not selling Iron Dome and other weapons, okay, to Ukraine, I'm imagining. Now, Pegasus spyware is developed by Israeli cyber arms company NSO Group. It's designed to covertly and remotely be installed on mobile phones, iOS and Android. They market it as a product for fighting crime, but it's used as a spyware to surveil journalists, lawyers, political dissidents, and human rights activists. Do you really think that this particular spyware is a good thing for Ukraine to employ, considering that they are targeting, I guess, people in Western countries?
Yes, absolutely, because they would the way Pegasus works, it limits the number of targets that you can deploy every year, and it's extremely expensive to use. So you are forced to prioritize your targets. And Ukraine is a U.S. ally. It's an ally of many European countries. Naturally, it would not have any incentive to target anyone but people who have a who present a very serious threat to its security, and certainly not people with U.S. numbers or anything like that. I would not be concerned. This is the choice of targets is actually not a big concern in this matter at all, much as many people would like to make it out to be.
Ukraine's cyber army, their iArmy, actually targeted the New York Stock Exchange, and they actually had a conversation about the fact that they dropped it. So they are targeting the U.S. people, U.S. companies.
And by the way, this cyber brigade would not be the one deploying that particular outfit, because NSO only sells the spyware to government groups, and it could certainly only sell it to people who would be responsible about it and use it responsibly. So that, again, is not a particular concern.
Okay, we've got to wrap it up for the time being. Irina, I want to thank you for coming on, and I'm really looking forward to having you back again. And really, we need to pick it up right here when you do come on. Is that okay?
Perfect. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Where can our listeners find you?
Well, there's my professional website, Scarab Rising, The Washington Outsider. I have a YouTube channel under my name that also has the Washington Outsider reports programs that I do, as interviewing other people in addition to my programming, and also have the Washington Outsider Substack, which mostly comprises of my media appearances that people can follow, but also has a few articles that I've written as well.
And it's Irina Sukerman, that's T-S-U-K-E-R-M-A-N. And that's where you find you on, that's where we find you on YouTube, yes?
Yes, and then also, of course, on Facebook and LinkedIn as well.